You will never be the same.
And for the full catastrophe, he didn't mean it was all bad.
Oh, that I wasn't has a way of saying, don't play with me.
If I invite you to the dance, with the Lord of the dance.
God didn't call America to do what she's doing in the world now.
Please dance.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Untitled, the joint video slash audio podcast effort between Unfailing Love Church Fort Wayne and Unfinished Community. I am Pastor Tim, which I feel like I shouldn't have to keep introducing myself, you know, this many episodes in.
It's fine.
But, you know, go ahead.
I'm Pastor Mal.
And I'm Pastor Don, way from sunny, sunny Japan. And if you don't know who any of us are now, I mean, come on, we're at what?
Please go back to episode one.
Seriously.
What episode are we in now? I think it's different between your channel and our channel.
Yeah, I think you might have missed one.
Episodes.
I don't know. Whatever episode it is the episode that it is.
Someone didn't upload.
Yeah, I uploaded two today. Just because I forgot that I didn't do it already.
Yeah, fun behind the scenes fact, this is why Dragon Ball in the US is different from Dragon Ball in Japan. Just kidding.
It's not exactly wrong.
Yeah, that happens a lot. But anyway, regardless of what episode it actually is, we're going to talk about the Bible at some point. And by the Bible, I mean the Bible and not Dragon Ball, which I could talk about for a while, but you know.
I was going to say, me and you could probably go back and forth on
I'm
that.
I'm going to the couch.
Yeah, she's out if that comes up. She's done.
Okay, fine. Fine, we'll talk about Star Trek. Can I make everybody happy?
Of course we will.
But anyway, we'll reel it back in just a little bit. And then we'll reel it back out later. It's fine.
That's awesome.
But yeah, we've been kind of doing I guess you could call it a series kind of right now. Working kind of in conjunction with the Bible study that Pastor Don's been doing. Over with, I'm sorry, I'm 100% blanking on the church that we're doing that
with. That would be First Reformed Church of New Brunswick, New Jersey. Remind people, is not named just because it happens to be a fun named church, because they are literally the First Reformed Church.
Which is pretty awesome, honestly.
Yeah.
And
they've been around for...
Yeah, right. Maybe they know a little bit. But, you know, but we are kind of digging into those verses deeper. And detoxifying the Bible, you know, to the degree we can with the amount of interpretations, you know, purposeful and accidental that have gone into it so far.
Yeah. So in the interest of detoxifying it, we've done a lot of kind of money verses. We've done a lot of other sorts of verses, over the past few. But now that we've kind of limbered up and gotten ourselves ready to take a big, solid swing.
Get the stretches.
And now that we've really limbered up, gotten ourselves in good shape, we're going to do what anybody who's feeling strong and feeling fit does, and we're going directly to Sodom and Gomorrah.
Of course.
You know, the only place to go at that point.
Only logical.
If you go by standard evangelical logic, if you're going to find a lot of, you know, fit people in good shape who are really willing to explore, that'd probably be where you'd find them.
Correct.
More than likely.
Yeah, fun fact, if you've been followers of our program to date, you may have noticed evangelical logic does not carry much weight here, so it's probably not about that.
Yeah, if you're here for like the whole evangelical spin on things, unless it's a really pissed off ex-evangelical and a really pissed off ex-evangelical's view on it, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Just letting you know that now.
The take it ain't necessarily going to suit you.
But...
To get you all properly titillated and stuff, let's look at Genesis chapter 19, which is lovingly titled The Depravity of Sodom.
Ooh.
Ooh, but I bet you it's not the depravity you're thinking.
Guess I'll have to find out.
Stay tuned.
All right. Let's begin. We're going to do Genesis 19 up to verse 29, because there's a separate bit of weirdness from verse 30 on out that's not really related to what we're talking about. I'm sure we can tackle that on another date if people want to see
it.
For now, we're going to focus on Sodom, Gomorrah, the various cities of the plains, fire, brimstone, and pillars of salt and whatnot, which begins with chapter 19 and goes up to verse 29. So I shall begin with the reading of the word of the Lord.
Be about it.
The two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. He said, Please, my lords, turn aside to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet, and you can rise early and go on your way. They said, no, we will spend the night in the square. But he urged them strongly, so they turned aside to him and entered his house. And he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. But before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man surrounded the house. And they called out to Lot, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so we may know them. Lot went out of the door to the men, shut the door after him, and said, I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Look, I have two daughters who have not known a man. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof. As if his daughters hadn't. But anyway, but they replied, stand back. And they said, this fellow came here as an alien, and he would play the judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them. Then they pressed hard against the man, and Lot came near to the door to break it down. But the men inside reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the door of the house, both small and great, so that they were unable to find the door. And then the men said to Lot, have you anyone else here, sons-in-law, sons, daughters, or anyone you have in the city? Bring them out of this place. We are about to destroy this place because the outcry against its people has become great before the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. So Lot went out and said to his sons-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, up, get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city. But he seemed to his sons-in-law to be jesting. When morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, get up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or else you will be consumed in the punishment of the city. But he lingered. So the men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and left him outside the city. When they had brought him outside, they said, flee for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the plain. Flee to the hills, or else you will be consumed. And Lot said to them, oh, no, my lords, your servant has found favor with you, and you have shown me great kindness in saving my life, but I cannot flee to the hills for fear the disaster will overtake me and I die. Look, the city is that city is near enough to flee to, and it's a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my life will be saved. He said to him, very well, I will grant you this favor too, and will not overthrow the city of which you spoke. And hurry, escape there, for I can do nothing until you arrive there. Therefore, the city was called Zoar. The sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah sulfur and fire from the Lord out of heaven, and he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But Lot's wife behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord, and he looked down towards Sodom and Gomorrah and towards all the land of the plain, and saw the smoke of the land going up like the smoke of a furnace. So it was that when God destroyed the cities of the plain, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had settled. So, stuff happened.
Lots of stuff happened. Yeah.
Lots and lots and lots of stuff, no pun intended.
Right, yeah.
A little bit intended.
So, before we dig into the theological implications of how we've massively misread this passage over centuries,
right?
I'm going to go ahead and throw out one piece out here that really just kind of tickles my fancy. had to be about 6-7 years ago. I was reading an article, I think it was in Astronomy Today, actually, but it was something in Astronomical Sciences that had kind of teamed up with some archaeological research and discovered evidence of a cometary impact in the Middle East, roughly about the time that we've attributed to Sodom and Gomorrah. And it wasn't actually in the Middle East. The cometary impact itself was like northern India, Pakistan, or something like this. So it wasn't like anywhere near this area. But they did the rough calculations over it and realized that a low altitude, low angle approach, which is what they assumed the comet had, would have had it passing pretty near to the ground in a straight line over Sodom, Gomorrah, and the various cities of the plains, like, you know, Edom and all these other ones here. And what would have happened is there would have been atmospheric sulfur and other things that would have basically just crispified this chunk of land.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly if like the atmospheric explosion, like it goes through the atmosphere, does some burning, but it hits like certain explosive points. And so if one of those points happened directly above these cities, whoosh, you have a chunk of stuff that happened. So it is not impossible that this was actually a thing that happened caused by actual stellar phenomena. So like the actual obliteration of the actual cities of the plane is a thing that may actually have actually happened.
Actually, factually.
And this is not to say that, oh, therefore God wasn't involved. This is to point out the fact that God's involvement is not usually involved the overthrow of nature, but involves the connection of nature. And to go beyond that, our interest here isn't in the how of it. So the mechanics of, and God rained down fire and sulfur from the Lord of heaven, we don't give a crap about that part. Like, I mean, like we've envisioned that religiously for years as, you know, God Almighty kind of opened the trap door on the bottom of heaven and just started chucking old sulfur down there. Okay, what really happened is it was a comet and maybe some asteroid fragments and, you know, breaking the sound barrier. Just around. Like, there were real relativistic mechanics involved in that, but we're not interested in the how of it, we're interested in the why. Why those cities? Why that time? And incidentally, flash-firing carbon will often produce, like, sodium pillars, and carbon-based, so, like, I mean, I'm not a scientist, but that does seem to line up at least, you know, squint, if you will, a little bit for biblical accuracy. Right. That does seem to line up pretty reasonably well. If you were a little too close to that blast, you might have gotten a little saltified.
Yeah.
It could have been ash, you know, more than salt, but of course, like, he's not going to go touch it. How you going to know?
Right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he didn't walk back and give it one more lick for good time's sake, you know?
Right. Like, let me make sure.
No, my poor wife, lick.
That's salt, yep.
That's salt. That's saltier than I recall. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that's not.
And I recall.
I'm pretty sure that's not what Lot was doing.
No, I'm quite certain that's probably not what happened.
So this is the point in the episode where we put the broke Mallory counter. Ding, that's one.
Yeah, put it up.
Dang it. It's going to be so high this time.
I know. We're already off to a good start.
Yes, we're doing great.
So yeah. Physics aside, rather than me just ranting at pretty much every line of this often abused text, I'm going to kick it back to you guys and let you Q&A it. You team me up and I'll just go ahead and smack them.
I got them ready.
I know you've got questions because...
I mean, it's not so much questions. Like, this is... So, you know, the tiniest background on myself and Pastor Mao. We created Unfailing Love Church of Fort Wayne as kind of a bastion of, you know, LGBTQ plus Christianity, understanding that there's been a lot of mistranslation and, you know, actively using the Bible against the LGBTQ community where it's not meant to be done. So this is one of those ones that we've talked about
a lot.
And, you know, this along with Leviticus, which is always fun, and I'm sure we'll get into that down
we'll
the
get
line.
To it. I'm looking back in the future here. It's on the list.
Right. But yeah, Sodom and Gomorrah is like always a huge one. I mean, they literally named, you know, the act of, you know, having sex in the non-traditional sense, sodomy. You know, I don't know how much we can say on YouTube without getting taken down. So
no, we won't get taken down. We'll get demonetized, but I'm not making money off it anyway, so it works.
Well, right. We're good.
Yeah.
So in the butthole, there you go.
Yeah.
It literally named it sodomy from the Bible story while completely misunderstanding what was actually going on.
Yeah.
Now, without getting too far, we're going to dig into that piece in the next episode where we take apart the Ezekiel passage where it says exactly in a very concise way what Sodom and Gomorrah was about. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but a nice little preview for that is that if you want to be technically accurate to the sin of our sister Sodom here, it is not accurate to call people who prefer visiting through the back entrance. It's not appropriate to refer to them as sodomites, but Republicans, on the other hand, totally fit the bill. Anyway.
You want to know more about that one? Watch next week.
Yeah, stay tuned.
This is our shameless plug for our own episode.
Speak for yourself. I have no shame. Anyway.
Reeling it back to where we were is, you know, we hear these, you know, being part of the LGBTQ, you hear these verses.
I'm pretty sure we had a sermon on this right before we left your family church.
Yeah, and it was just like, and they really hammer home that, you know, there was the, you know, homosexuality going on, and clearly that's why they were, you know, taken out. And like you said, we'll cover that in more fullness next week, but that's just always what people focus on here. They don't focus on what was going on.
And specifically, as I've heard it, at least, where is it? Yeah, it's verse 5 that I hear brought up a lot. Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we may know them.
How dare you make friends?
Yeah, well, carnal implications aside, because, like, let's be honest, even in the Hebrew, that does carry with it the carnal implication.
Right.
We can't deny that fact. But what we do deny when we preach this as an anti-homosexual thing is this isn't a group of men coming out saying, hey, here's a fresh set of backsides. Let's get into that.
Right.
That isn't what's happening here. First off, in the whole passage preceding that, like, the term men is really only used in a more general sense. So there may have been women present in the group as well. Right. Or otherwise. So, like, we have no idea the degree to which consumptive desire was being expressed here or from what particular sets of genitals it was being expressed. However, there is a practice that was common in Sodom, that was actually common in most of the ancient Israelite world. It was common in the Greek world as well, which is going to keep coming back again and again and again, which was the use of sexual penetration as a means of physical oppression rather than sexual gratification, as a means of demonstrable physical abuse to put someone in their place.
Yeah.
A means of showing dominance. It was using something that was created for a loving purpose as an abusive tool. And that is the intent here. Like, this is not the only time this happens in Sodom and Gomorrah. It's not the only time it happened in the ancient Middle East. You know, a foreigner comes to town, like, all right, well, it's time to show these foreigners who's boss with our dicks.
Right.
Yeah.
Like no, thank you.
That was the cultural equivalent of forcing people into orange picking jobs, you know, like we're going to show you your place in our society, and we're going to do it by holding you down and doing unspeakable things to you against your will. The violation of consent as a form of abuse.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. That's the key cultural piece to understand before going into this. Because if you don't understand that, then this whole passage comes off like, well, God hates butt sex.
Yeah. Right.
Like, that clearly that's what it is. Which, setting aside that we're dealing with two angels here, we're using male pronouns because that's just kind of what we've always done when gender is undefined. Yeah. Because we're not great at using gender indeterminate language even today. So
what? No way.
Like, it doesn't read two angels came to Sodom in the evening with their penises swinging in the breeze. Like, there's no clear definition. Right.
Yeah, there's no real indication that that's the case.
But... yeah, like, masculinity is neither suggested nor explicitly expressed here. So even with angels, so there is a whole lot of, like, mental twisting you have to do before you even get to male on male sex as being a component here.
Yeah,
we don't know that they're male. We don't know that they're human. In fact, we explicitly know that they're not.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, before we even get to anything else, like, this isn't really a male on male act we're discussing here. This is a violative, non-consensual act as a means of expressing social dominance that we're talking about here. Which, if you're, you know, a conservative evangelical, you for some reason can't separate from a loving homosexual relationship. And, you know, in the interest of saving one to spite the other, it's definitely not a lesbian relationship, so you can throw that right out.
Right, there you go. All good.
Yeah.
But we can guarantee you here that even in the most conservative reading of the text, there's at least one male partner involved. So, you know, lesbians, y'all cool.
Yes!
Hey.
My only exception.
Done and done.
Again, you have to go through, like, multiple steps of mental gymnastics to make a connection between this and a loving, consensual homosexual relationship of any flavor.
Right.
And yet these are the people that say that they're reading the Bible literally.
Yeah. Like, the only thing that's being expressed here is a desire to initiate a carnal encounter. Non-consensually. That's literally the only thing that's being expressed here. There are no gender lines.
Yeah, we said it before we started recording. Consent is important every time.
Yeah. And like, one of these days, we'll have a conversation about the story of Onan. And I really got to drive home the point that, like, literally the whole point of the Bible, anytime it talks about sex, is that it's driving home the idea, consent. You know,
consenting.
The beard is not the only thing that Jesus has in common with Will Riker. Let me be clear. Deep cut Star Trek reference to Will Riker as a consent fetishist. Anyway, moving on.
I was just going to let it go, but you had to explain it.
I love the little explanations afterwards. That's the best part.
As a pastor, I have to concede to the fact that maybe not everyone in our listening audience is a Star Trek fan that understands the sexual proclivities of one William T. Riker.
But again, this many episodes into the series, are they not?
You may have picked up a thing or two by now.
You got something there.
Anyway, so that's our kind of like our end, I think, chunk out of this first paragraph ish here. It's basically been like, yeah, this wasn't like a homosexual city. Like I've heard that put out a lot of times before, the idea that like Sodom and Gomorrah were 100% homosexual cities, that there was nobody straight in the city. And I gotta be honest, I have no idea where in the hell that one's coming from.
Yeah, that's insane. That you have entire cities that are all gay. Like, yeah. I don't think...
Like, I don't know if y'all understand biology, but if that were the case, how does verse 4 work? But before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old. How do you get young people if it's a gay city? There's a couple things. You're
bringing them from all around. There's like
a couple of differences between straight and non-straight relationships here, but I'm pretty sure that one of them is that only straight relationships are capable of genetically producing children. Yeah. Since they didn't have artificial insemination or other techniques back then. They really only had the bio standard. How does that happen?
Yeah, right.
Very carefully.
many immaculate conceptions of men, apparently.
Yeah. Like, there was no modern technology in those days, except for turkey basters, I guess.
Did they even have those yet?
Do they have turkeys? Like,
I'm sure they had turkeys.
Audience
poll. Did the ancient Middle East invent the turkey baster before discovering turkeys?
Which came first, the turkey or the turkey baster?
Leave it in the comments.
That's it. That's our flavor text for the episode.
Boom.
Okay. Anyway. yeah. I want to drive this point home, though. But if we look at like verse 8 on out. Well, actually, verse 9 on out, because I want to talk about verse 8 separately. Holy crap, do I? Right. Verse 9 on out, like, you know, stand back. This fellow came here as an alien and he would play the judge. Right away, we kind of see where Sodom is at. They're like, them foreigners. That is immediately the twist with them is...
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, yeah. Which, of course, raises the question, what exactly did Lot have to do in order to be able to settle down in that city?
For like, real.
That's a section of the story of Abram and Lot I'd probably like to know more about, if I could ever get an addendum. God, maybe.
I was gonna say, they weren't real clear about that.
Yeah.
Can do a lot, I bet.
I was going to say, if that's what they were doing to the newcomers, had a good time.
Yeah. Now, I think we do have to talk about verse 8. Because, like...
Yeah, that's the one that
like we want our biblical heroes to be heroes, right?
This is a Deadpool move.
No, it's really a Deadpool move. He was immediately willing to throw his daughters to the wolves. And there is, I think this is an important thing to look at too in the Bible, because we see levels of divinity in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Like, some people who just don't freaking get it, and that's the men trying to beat down the door so that they can rape foreigners.
Right.
But we also get some who kind of get it, which is like Lot, who like, okay, these are definitely divine people. We probably shouldn't be sexually assaulting foreigners. Like there are multiple levels to that here. But his immediate response to fixing the situation is kind of like, by the way, fun plug for Back to Basics, our series talking about Genesis, because we've been talking about this a lot, how his brother Abraham at this point, how Lot's brother Abraham kind of has a go-to move every time things aren't looking right, which is to basically sexually assault someone.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anytime he gets a little bit of anxiety, he just sexually assaults something and it seems to work out.
Do not spit that on my computer.
Spitters are quitters.
Going into Egypt, worried about how we might be received. All right, I'm going to sell my wife into sexual slavery.
Yeah.
Not quite sure how the promise is going to play
first
out.
First plan.
But God's given me a promise of descendants, but like my wife's a little bit old. All right, time to rape me a slave girl. Like he immediately defaults to sexual assault, which is, in the context of the time, not a divine way of doing it, but definitely very in keeping with a human way of thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Because again, they understood.
For human civilization at the time, as we've discussed earlier, consent wasn't really a major factor and was something that God keeps trying to say, no, you should probably do that.
But so really, consent
still seems to not be some people's main factor.
Right. So Lot is part way there. Like, all the way good. He's not all the way bad. And most of the people in the Bible are like that. Like, every biblical person we talk about. I'm sure in the evangelical communities it's this way. I know it's been this way for me growing up as well. We like to have our biblical heroes be heroes. We like to think about great victorious King David, who definitely didn't creep on some chick across from the balcony and then kind of murder her husband. Definitely like to think of Solomon the wise, not Solomon the guy who disobeyed every commandment God set for him and got super rich to the point that he torpedoed the United Kingdom of Israel.
Never happened.
Yeah, we like our biblical heroes to be heroes. So like in this story, Lot's the hero, and so we read a passage like this, we're like, it just kind of glosses off our mind like it's got a perception filter on it,
right?
Like,
right.
But the thing is, he definitely did that. Like, Lot was definitely, no, please rape my daughters instead.
Yeah.
And to which, this is why I think the angel's response after that is important, where, they come to the shoulder of my roof, but they replied, stand back. And so that, like, the angel's like, no, get your ass back inside.
Right. Like, what are you doing?
Like, no, Lot, just, no, you did your best. You're human, all right. Good try, buddy. Let the big
you're great, buddy.
You had him in the first half, and then he just kind of went off the rails.
Yeah. He's a little confused, but he's got the spirit. So, I mean, like, the angels are there to keep Lot from doing something terrible, but it's worth noting that Lot is not perfect here. And I know that not perfect and please rape my daughters is not exactly a linguistic.
Yeah, not exactly the same line.
But given the context of the time, like, you understand what I'm getting at here.
It's like a square is a rectangle, but that rectangle ain't a square.
Yeah. Very much so. So Lot at this moment is like, he's trying to get there. He recognizes that these things aren't good and he's trying to affect change, but he's still mired in the, we don't care about consent or women or other people, really, kind of constraints at the time. So his operative solution is still pretty rapey.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah, and so, but that is, I hate to say it, that's how change happens, is we don't go from all the rape to none of the rape, we go to marginally less rapey positions until we eventually get to where we're going, because we're human and we still all kind of suck.
Yeah,
really a lot.
Yeah, there's a key part in talking about verse 8 that I've heard comebacks from less evangelical people, because again, like you said, they kind of gloss off of that because they're like, oh no, Lot had to be perfect. I hear this more from the non-believing part of kind of who we deal with, and they're like, look, you're in this story, it doesn't matter if you're saying that, you know, this isn't about homosexuals or whatever, it's still in your Bible, this man is offering his daughters as rape victims instead of these angels, it's not that much better. And it's like, but you have to go into verse 9. You have to recognize that God's servants, the angels, don't let that happen.
Right.
Yeah. Now
they're out the door like, nope.
I think there's an obvious point here when reading the Bible that is just so blindingly obvious that we all kind of miss it. To borrow from Douglas Adams, this particular point I'm going to mention is a lot like the invention of the cat flap. I can see you already know the passage to which I'm referring. The cat flap is something that is blindingly obvious. Of course, you would cut a hole in the door for a cat to get in and out. But until someone invented it, it wasn't obvious. It's only obvious in retrospect once you've done it. Like, oh, of course you would do that. It's so obvious you don't even need to give credit to the person who invented it, which is why we don't know who invented the cat flap. Because it's, as soon as it came out, we're like, oh, of course, that's a stupidly obvious thing to do. But until that point, it wasn't obvious because we couldn't see the forest for the trees. And what I'm going to say is kind of in that same category. So I want you to all buckle in for this one. All right. Are we ready? That was perfect and in unison. And if you are listening to this on the podcast, you have missed out severely.
Go to the YouTube right now. Even if you go back to the last 10 seconds.
Buckling at chef's kiss. That was perfect. Thank you for that.
We spent too much time together.
My Lord. Anyway, here's the point. In the entirety of the Bible, start to finish, out of every single human being in this, only one of them is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It's not Lot.
No. What? No, it's not.
Pretty sure it's the Jesus fella, and he's not going to be around for a couple thousand years yet.
Right, yeah.
So, like, this is something, and I run into this when I'm talking with, like, non-believers and other folks about why is the Bible so terrible. They're like, well, you've got your own biblical hero right here who's suggesting the rape of his daughter. I'm like, yeah, because he's an ass.
Right.
He's not a good guy.
Yeah, he sucks, man.
He's marginally better. Like, this is a guy who chose repeatedly. If you go back into the previous couple of chapters, this is a guy who on several occasions had the opportunity to go somewhere else and chose repeatedly to live in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah.
Like, he's marginally better than his environment. But Lot's not a great guy.
Not that bright.
Like, he's a guy who looked at Sodom and Gomorrah and said, yeah, there's a community I can fit in with. I can make this work.
I can change them.
Let me go down that road. Like,
Spoiler alert, you can't.
No. Yeah.
That's
and it's worth noting in previous categories or previous chapters as well. There's no indication that Lot's desire to settle there was rooted in a missional attitude at all. He just wanted a place to set up shop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and he chose Sodom and Gomorrah. So, like,
that's a good idea.
You know, Lot worships the right God. He is marginally better than the people around him, but there is no caveat or claim made that Lot is necessarily a good person by any standard we would use today. We don't deny God's presence in the story by denying the full goodness of and perfection of Lot. That's not a thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be one in the thing.
Yeah. God is still present with profoundly broken and evil people. Otherwise, it wouldn't be God. And that's what we see in a lot of these stories. Like, Lot we see as a lesser biblical hero. Okay, fine. We accept that he's Sodom and Gomorrah-ing his life away. Sure. So let's go up to a bigger biblical hero, Abram, who, as I mentioned earlier, uses sexual assault the way most of us would use a screwdriver.
Right. Yeah. Problem?
Got
sexual
it.
Assault.
It's like, and modernly we're looking at, no, you want a screwdriver, wrong cylindrical object. Come on.
Right, yeah.
Man.
Like,
yeah, I mean, you don't really think about that until you're breaking down passages like this of just like,
what, that he was such a toolbox?
That, but just in general in the Bible, like, how many times? Like, it is made clear of these are not perfect people we're dealing with here.
Yeah,
these are broken people used by God for, you know, one specific purpose, but they're still human.
And like, when we revisit these passages and talk about how these people are broken, it's always like we talk about their brokenness in very sanitized ways. Like Abraham had his doubts. Like he wasn't sure God would. Like, no, Abraham raped folk every time he got confused.
Yeah, Abraham couldn't keep his robe on. Like,
yeah. Is this what I'm supposed to do? No.
Okay. No, again.
Is this what I'm supposed to do?
No, assault is not the answer.
Yeah. You can't just keep sexually assaulting things until life gets better.
Yeah.
Maybe if he does it enough times, it will be the right thing.
Here you go. That's his theory. You can't keep trying to put the square peg in the round hole.
Look, this is actually I don't want to get too far off of Sodom and Gomorrah into Abraham, but this is, Abraham actually is a really good example of humans misunderstanding what God has in mind. God says to Abraham, I will make you the father of many nations. Your descendants will outnumber the stars in the skies. And you can just almost see Abraham going like, I know how to handle this.
Challenge accepted.
God, you are speaking my language. And God's like, no. Right? No, just, I'm going to make Sarai have kids. Stop it.
Yeah, right.
Let's just be glad Viagra wasn't invented yet. Yeah. Let's right. just...
For real.
Oh my God. Thank God for that. But seriously, like, the humanity of our characters is something that is absolutely, like, central to understanding these texts. We're not looking for good people here. We're looking for what happened. So, in the interest of making sure we don't run too long, from 12 to 29, we kind of talked about the potential of a comet asteroid impact. Was there anything else you wanted to pick apart from the actual destruction of the city, or was it just the gay stuff?
I mean, it's usually my focus. It's fine.
Or was it just the gay stuff? That's a perfect one.
I think that just, I can't come back from that.
The perfect wording. I love it.
Yeah. But I mean, no, I mean, that's the thing is it, with that kind of background information given at the beginning with, you know, the comet coming in, and it actually makes a lot more sense now of like, and we've always kind of, at least within my relationship, not always personally, but we've always kind of had this understanding of why do we have to have science and faith working against each other?
Right. They should be together.
We should be making sure that those work together. And that makes so much sense. Because if God's going to set science into motion, why would he not use it to do the things that needed done?
Literally the second sermon I ever preached in my career was on that exact topic. So I'm with you 1,000%.
Yeah, I just, it blows my mind how, like you said earlier, how many hoops that you have to jump through to just be like, nope, this was divine. It's like, there's potentially explainable reasons as to why this happened and how this happened.
And again, this is the key point here, is that the divinity of what happens here, the divine involvement, is not concerned so much with the mechanics of the event. Like the how of it, it's just as divine if God opens the trap door and starts like just kind of chucking balls of rock and sulfur down there. That is just as divine as incoming cometary fragments that the Enterprise happened to miss from orbit. You know?
Right.
Like both of those are equally divine. Fun fact, there's an episode of the new series Strange New Worlds that really wrestles with this. And if you haven't seen Anson Mount as Captain Pike, I would severely recommend it. Anyway, my point is the faith is not concerned with the what, it's concerned with the why. Like, was it, you know, God chucking rocks like tennis balls, or was it a comet? It's irrelevant to the fact that those cities at those times, in that place, in the middle of that narrative with that timing, why that? Like, time is just as much a dimension as space. That asteroid could have run smack dab into Michigan, and on a galactic scale, it would have meant nothing.
Right.
Like, that rock passed over that specific place in the Middle East at that time. That's the part where the divinity is. Then the timing of it, the orchestration according to the greater narrative. That's what concerns me. The how of it, of course it's explicable. Everything is, in the fullness of time, explicable. The orderedness of creation has nothing to do with mechanics and everything to do with what we would otherwise call coincidence, with timing.
Right.
Right. It's the bigger picture of, like, how do these things all play together? If you look at One Piece, you're not going to see the full picture.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, that's one person hitting middle C on the keyboard. Yeah. But, okay, whether it's that magical note you hear drifting from a concert hall or whether you're literally watching the hammer hit the string, it's still just a middle C. But when that middle C is played in the middle of a full piano sonata with complete orchestra, suddenly you realize that by itself, it's nothing. Like the whether you see the mechanics or not. But when it's put together with everything, it becomes something greater than the sum of its parts. And that's how reality works.
Exactly.
We're not interested in the physics of how the violin is built. We're interested in the symphony.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that sums up this entire passage is you can't take one part out of it and be like, ah, the gaze. And it's like, no. In the complete picture of what's going on here, the fact that there were, you know, men in the house, because again, as you said, like the masculinity is not mentioned.
Men.
Like, yeah, exactly. And it's the fact that they're in the house, like that's the big deal. No. It's that there were people wanting to, you know, sexually assault not just those men. They were ready to assault Lot's daughters and Lot himself. Because, I mean, they give that, too, of just like, you know, he wants to tell us what to do. We'll get him, too.
We got a mob. We got enough for all y'all. Come on.
Yeah, there wasn't any, you know, discrimination of who they were going to turn on.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, there's bodies, they're warm, let's take them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's your problem.
What you're witnessing wasn't an act of desire in terms of sexuality or intimacy or relational connection. What you were witnessing was an act of assault. Like those, if you can't understand that those are fundamentally different things, then there's something truly flawed with your humanity that you need to assess.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a bigger issue.
I hope that it's something we can help you with.
Yeah. You know, I'm still stuck on just how great of a title. If I were to ever write a book of evangelical theology, I would just call it "Ah, the Gays."
And with that,
that has to be the title.
Yeah, that's the reason why I haven't added fun flavor titles on these episodes. By the way, dear listener, we have too many good options in every episode.
Ah, the gays.
Look, when we have like 50, 60 episodes built off of these, we'll both go back and just retitle them.
I think that once we've gotten to a certain point, we should stop and just do like a competition episode for best one-liners. Just like rewatch all our videos.
Look forward to that on the channel.
Yeah, we'll do a big community poll there in the Discord server or whatnot. Vote for your favorite one-liner from our video series.
Yeah, we'll just cut them all together.
Speaking of the Discord server, join it, please.
Yes.
Come hang out on the Discord. We have a lot of fun over there. You know, there's memes flying back and forth, you know, deep conversations about, you know, how we do our, you know, religion, our spirituality, down to, you know, does God fuck?
We do have an NSFW channel specifically for that.
Yeah.
Yep. We've been bandying that about for a little bit. We've recently been discussing like clergy sexual assault, which is something that happened in my regional body not too long ago. And like, what does that look like from an accountability standpoint? How do we not be terrible with that sort of thing?
One way or the other.
There are a lot of good and necessary conversations happening there. And another good reason is just we're trying to reinvent what church is, because church doesn't seem to be working for a lot of folk anymore. So you want to get in on that discussion? Get in on that discussion. We want you there.
You want fun?
Yeah. As mentioned earlier, also, we have this weekly Bible study that we're doing in conjunction with First Reformed Church in New Brunswick. Details for that are on website and on, I think they're on the website. They're also on the Discord server, though. So
they are on the Discord. I know that for sure.
Yeah. That much I know for sure. I probably should update the website more often than I do. We also have our weekly we got our weekly Dungeons and Dragons group that's coming up for me tomorrow. It's 2 days yet for you because you're behind me in time because temporal physics are a thing.
Yay, wibbly wobbly time.
We're living in a Doctor Who episode. It's great.
Future.
So like we got our weekly Dungeons and Dragons gig. We got a lot of stuff happening. If you're in Japan, please definitely reach out to me because we need more of our folks here to help with building up this church that we're building here. So like, lots of stuff going on. It is a busy time for Unfinished Community, and it's a busy time for Unfailing Love, I assume. If not, we're going to make
different times a busy partner. Time for us.
Yeah. So, you know, every day is a busy day when you're doing the work of God and not really getting paid for it. That's life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
doing great.
Yeah, like, share, subscribe. We said we're not monetized, but hey, if enough people watch this, maybe we could.
Hey.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
And maybe we won't have to make our apartment.
Maybe we wouldn't have to hold down other jobs. That would be so nice.
Oh, man, that'd be great.
Yeah, just to do this.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, definitely check us out. You know, we're so glad that you guys take the time to sit through our crazy little discussions, but good we hope luck. It helps. And one more plug for the Discord. If you want a community that doesn't shy away from difficult questions when it comes to your faith, you know, lack thereof, we answer each and every question, just depends on how. And you know, if you can deal with that, I guess is the key.
Yeah, your response may be more snarky than you were looking for, but it will be your response. I can guarantee that.
Yes, it will be thought out. It may just be snarky.
And I gotta be clear: if you've gotten to this point of the video and were unclear as to whether or not snarkiness would be a component of a response you got, then I gotta look at what you're doing.
You must have skipped the entirety of the video just to get to the end to say you watched it. Which, if you did that, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll go back and check out the rest of it. If you want the quick summary, the gays is pretty good what we're doing.
The gays and comments.
Yeah, exactly. Like, share, subscribe, comment. Otherwise, have a good week, and we will see you in the next episode, which for you will be another week, and for us will be, I don't know, about 5 minutes.
4 seconds.
Yeah.
Love you guys. Have a wonderful week.
Bye.
Bye.